and Disorder, the program that you just heard here over WBAI 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Coming up in just a moment, Bike Snob with Evan Weiss.
Hello, you're listening to Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Evan Weiss. Last Wednesday in Park Slope, Brooklyn, Myra Manning, operating under the banner Citizens United for Safety, held a meeting called Inside Bike Lanes. The focus was on the 9th Street bike lane in that neighborhood. And the flyers advertising the meeting, which were posted all over the neighborhood, read thusly. What would you do if your house were on fire and the ambulances and fire trucks couldn't get to you in time because of narrowed streets caused by bike lanes? I addressed this briefly in last week's show. There's really no basis for this whole bike lane slowdown, fire trucks, and ambulances thing. Yes, actually, response times are slower. They're trending slower in the city as far as emergency response. But according to the mayor's management report, which just came out, wherein all the city agencies report on how they're doing, bike lanes is not a factor. Here's what that report says. About emergency response. Quote, in fiscal 2019, structural fire dispatch and travel time to all structural fire incidents increased 8 seconds compared to fiscal 2018. Travel time increases may be partly attributed to continued population growth with more vehicles on the road and more construction. There's nothing in there about bike lanes or street designs or anything like that holding up these emergency responses. If you drive, if you take the bus, if you ride a bike, you see what's causing the traffic out there. You see it's all the cars and the construction. The same thing that makes it impossible for you to find a parking space is making it impossible for these emergency vehicles to get around. Too many cars and trucks. Anyway, the pretense for this meeting was spurious enough, but according to reports, this particular meeting last week in Park Slope, this anti-bike lane meeting, went off the rails, if it even had any rails to begin with. You may have heard about this meeting in the news. It was covered widely. Bike advocate Doug Gordon, also known as Brooklyn Spoke, told the following to Streets Blog. Here's his account of what happened at the meeting. Quote, Manning gave the floor over to John Halpern, whom she introduced as climate activist and documentarian who has produced films about, among other subjects, the Dalai Lama and saving souls. Halpern said his video was about projects that have been, quote, foisted upon the community by wolves in sheep's clothing and invoked a fearsome bike lobby more powerful and sinister than any known. The people of transportation, quote, he's quoting this Halpern guy, the people of transportation alternatives are not as alternative as they want to present themselves, he said. Their funding comes from the likes of billionaire Steve Ross, a crony of Jeff Epstein, and an elite group of backers. Okay, so Apparently, at this bike lane meeting last week, this featured speaker or documentarian or whatever he is, Halpern, shows this zany documentary about how this 14th Street bus lane project the city's doing is the product of some kind of deep state Pizzagate type conspiracy or something, and he's claiming transportation alternatives, the pedestrian and cycling advocacy group, is funded by all these people, which it's not. And everyone at this meeting is now arguing and shouting over each other and whatever else. And so Doug Gordon, well-meaning bike advocate, goes up at the meeting, and he starts reading the names of children who have been killed in New York by drivers. Because, okay, so this is a meeting about the 9th Street bike lane in Park Slope. And this 9th Street bike lane was installed after this really horrendous crash last year in which a driver ran a red light and killed a one-year-old and a four-year-old child. And the mother of one of the children was pregnant and ultimately lost that child to, and to cap it all off, the driver, Dorothy Bruns, who should never have been driving in the first place because she was prone to seizures, killed herself. Let's keep sight of all that, right? This is why this street was redesigned. It's dangerous. People, children have died. Okay, so Doug Gordon starts reading these names, apparently, at the meeting, and Halpern, the documentarian Pizzagate conspiracy theorist, goes over and shoves Doug Gordon and starts giving everyone the finger, like he's a pro wrestling heel or something like that. Here's what Gothamist had to say in reporting about this meeting. Here's what Gothamist had to say about this Halpern guy. Quote, this 64-year-old, who also hosts a weekly meditation class at a yoga studio near Union Square, told Gothamist that he didn't regret his conduct during the meeting. Quote, yeah, I shoved him. It's theater, he said. Quote, the majority of people in the room don't live here. My suspicion is at least 40% are lobbyists or friends of lobbyists. You heard them cheering in unison. And they note that Halpern himself lives in Inwood. So basically, this is the state of bike lane opposition. We have a bunch of angry people meeting in church basements and shoving each other. It's like the hardcore scene in the 1980s, except instead of teenage angst and rage, everyone's retirement age and they're angry about parking. And this guy teaches meditation, of all things. Okay, so I'm going to take calls today. The studio line here is 212-209-2877. We're talking about the state of anti-bike sentiment, and we're talking about specifically a recent meeting in Park Slope, Brooklyn, that went off the rails and turned into a bit of a shoving match. And in general, we're talking about sort of where we are in terms of bikes and bike lanes and how people feel about them and why people resent them and what they're doing. So please call in 212-209-2877. To continue, watching video of this meeting in Park Slope, this shoving match over a bike lane, there's plenty of clips on the internet about this meeting, by the way. Plenty of video clips. The day before the bike lane meeting, I myself was online at a CVS. It was a long line, and everyone was angry that they had to wait for their prescriptions. And they started getting hostile with each other. And I really thought, standing here on this line at CVS, that a fight was going to break out. People were insulting each other, strangers. What I realized the next day when this bike lane kerfuffle broke out was that the people on the CVS line and the people at the meeting angry about the bike lane were looking at them. You could see that they were from the same, let's say, demographic. Okay. You look at them, not to judge people by their appearance, but they all look like a bunch of Larry Davids, except they're not funny. Just a bunch of profoundly entitled people in blazers and t-shirts, very upset, ready to take up the cudgels of whatever whatever is threatening their convenience. And they're ready to confront the manager of the CVS or the DOT or the wait staff at the restaurant or each other or whoever they think is responsible for it when things aren't just the way we like it. See, whether it's the bike lane that's there because two kids died or they don't like it, or it's the medication they have to wait 30 minutes for, it's medication that most people in the world will never have access to. These people will just not take wait for an answer. They want it their way, and they want it now. The other thing I realized is that after shoving each other and cursing and arguing, whether it's at the bike lane meeting or the CVS, all these people are getting right in their cars afterwards, and they're driving to the next confrontation. These are the people honking at you the second the light turns green or inching into the crosswalk while you're trying to walk in it or parking in the bike lane because they just have to run in and grab their prescription. 212-209-2877 is the number to call in. WBAI, you're on the air. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had a call. I was wrong. Please call in. 212-209-2877 is the number to call. We're talking about bike lanes, anti-bike lane sentiment, what's fueling it, what's behind it, who are the people against it, and why. So is this anti-bike lane attitude out there, is it as simple as entitlement? Or is there something else going on here? Okay, we have some calls. 212-209-2877 is the number to call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
John, I'm calling from Manhattan.
Hi, John.
My observation, I'll just say, and then you can talk about it, about fire trucks, is that everyone is way too in a rush. No one gets out of the way. There was a short period right after 9/11 where, again, as in my youth, when there was a siren or something, cars would move off to the side as you're trained to do, and then the vehicle could go through. But as anyone who is around in the city now knows, that doesn't happen at all. It's almost impossible for emergency vehicles to get by, and it has nothing to do with bike lanes. It has to do with vehicles, in my opinion, not pulling over as they're supposed to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly right. If anything, the bike lanes can, in a number of instances, there are videos of this online, and I've seen it personally, where an emergency vehicle can use a bike lane because the very nature of bicycle traffic is such that, you know, you're not going to have cyclists immobile, not able to move out of the way of a vehicle. I mean, these big, wide, protected bike lanes, they can fit ambulances in them. They can fit these emergency responder vehicles. And yes, it does look like people are not in a rush, drivers, to get out of the way of these vehicles. Either they're not in a rush or they can't because it's gridlocked.
I think mostly they just don't.
Yeah, or they just don't, or they hear it and they're not sure where it's coming from, and they don't move until they see someone else move. And I think, you know, I wonder, this is speculation on my part, but I wonder if a lot of people just don't understand. Maybe I remember being taught what to do as a driver when that happens. I don't know if people need refreshers. I see people at intersections. Ironically, people are always in a big hurry to beat the light when they're driving. Yep. But, you know, when there's an emergency like that and there's a red light, you know, the drivers in front are supposed to move over even if there's a red light. Everyone's supposed to get out of the way, and yet people don't seem to realize it, and they're not doing what they're supposed to. They're not getting out of the way. Absolutely. But, you know, I think it's shameful and ridiculous that we of we use this as a pretense to stop bike lanes of all things.
Yeah. Beyond ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much for
that. All right. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it. Thanks. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Crystal Field, and I'm calling from Manhattan.
Hi, Crystal. How are you?
Fine. Are you on the air?
Yeah, we're both on the air. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the thing is that a friend of mine just got hit by a bike who was weaving in and out of traffic, into the bike lane, out of the bike lane. And the other problem is that there are a lot of electric bikes, and they're going along as quick as cars. I think they are like cars, and they should be licensed. And the other thing is, you can try to cross at the corner, but a lot of bikes, they don't stop at the red light. And you can get hit. And it's very scary for a pedestrian. So that's what I wanted to say. I don't know the answer to this problem, but it sure is a problem for the pedestrian.
I agree. First of all, I'm terribly sorry and angered to hear about your friend. I don't know the circumstances. You say that the bicyclist was weaving in and out of the bike lane. I don't know, as far as going in and out of the bike lane, there's a lot of reasons why someone might be doing that. They might be doing it because the bike lane is blocked or impassable for some reason, as is often the case.
But there was nothing wrong with the bike lane.
Okay, I'm not saying that your friend is to blame. Far from it. I don't know what the circumstances were. And look, as far as I'm concerned, anyone on a bike who hits anybody is wrong.
They also go the wrong way.
All of these things happen. As far as your comments about a cyclist who are not stopping at lights or are going the wrong way, all of these things happen, and these are bad things, and I disagree with them, and people should absolutely not do them. Bicyclists should be conscientious and all of that. As far as there being some way to address it. There's a number of levels here, and on one level you have the fact that this is I'm not saying this to annoy you or be smug or anything like that, but as frustrating and annoying as that behavior is, and yes, it can lead to people getting hit and injured, as is the case with your friend, as true as that is, the fact is that the real harm out there is being done by the cars and the drivers, and a lot of the bike stuff is more of a perceived menace, and that's not to dismiss it. But as far as my feeling and as far as addressing cyclist behavior that makes people uncomfortable, puts pedestrians at risk and so forth, so much of this has to do with changing the balance out there on the streets. And we have, as we're talking about with the ambulances and fire trucks, unable to get through because the roads are so choked with cars. The same what's happening is because we don't do anything to sort of reduce this huge volume of automobile traffic. Instead, when we address pedestrian needs, when we address cycling needs, we kind of stick everybody in the margins. We're not freeing up the space people need to. We're forcing bikes into the margins. Pedestrians are already in the margins. You just have the sidewalk, and you have the light to cross, to dart across. When the light changes because there's so many cars, it's so hard to cross. And what it does is it forces everybody into conflict. So you have bicyclists and pedestrians come into conflict because there's not enough space for both of them. And you see this on the city streets, and you see this on the bridges now going over the East River. As more and more people are riding over them, you have pedestrians and bicyclists don't have enough space on these paths, and it's real. I think a big part of it. Yes, there's no excuse for riding in a way that puts someone at risk.
That electric bikes should should be licensed like cars?
That's a complicated question. If it's an electric bike, there's so many kinds of electric bikes now. If it's an electric bike that is capable of a certain speed, that is something that should be discussed. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week on the show, and part of the problem with electric bikes, as far as how we, they're still technically the faster ones you're talking about, these throttle powered bikes are technically not legal on the streets. And the reason they're not legal is, even if you want to get a license and register such a bicycle legally, you cannot, because there's no category, the law has not been updated to reflect these new vehicles. So there's no way to do it. There is a bill that was recently passed in the state legislature to categorize these things and define which bikes need to be registered and which are legal and so forth. That bill has not, as to my knowledge, yet been signed by the governor. So all of this, this is a case, and it is a great point you make, that some of these bikes do go really fast. This is a case of the law and of policy just lagging way, way, way behind the changes in technology out there. And so you have these new vehicles out there. They're operating in space that has been designed for regular bicycles. And on top of it all, you have this bicycle infrastructure that's sort of operating alongside motor vehicle infrastructure, and you have too many motor vehicles, and a lot of these motor vehicles, they're parking in the bike lanes. The trucks are making deliveries in the bike lanes. The infrastructure becomes unusable. You have people, as you say, weaving in and out of bike lanes because they don't know where they to be, or they can't be in the bike lane, and it is a real mess. And you're right about all of these things. And the root, again, to get back to it, I think a big part of the problem is the balance is just too skewed to the largest, least efficient vehicles, and everybody else out there is sort of fighting for scraps and coming into conflict when they shouldn't. I hate it. It makes me so mad and upset every time I hear someone like you complain about a bicyclist, or I hear somebody hitting somebody. Bicyclists and pedestrians should not be coming into conflict. We have so many of the same interests, and so you're right about all of these things. And I want to thank you very much for the call. Thank you so much. I'm going to take another call. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name?
Hello.
Where are you calling
from?
Hello, Tom. Yeah.
Tom from Brooklyn.
Hi, Tom.
Yes. At this time, we don't remember the history of what's been going on recently. A couple of years ago, two children were killed by a truck at 3rd Avenue and 9th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Bike lane would have done them no good. And then so far this year, on 3rd Avenue in Brooklyn, within walking distance of where I live, four people have died from riding bicycles. Four. Mm-hmm. And nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it.
Well, I mean, people have talked about this a lot, about the death.
No. Did you ever mention it?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I've on every show when there's been a recent cycling death, I've talked about it. I've been through the death toll. We're at 22, I believe now. They're disproportionately happening in Brooklyn. They're disproportionately involving trucks, as it happens. I have talked about this as far as a bike lane.
I'm retired now.
Okay.
But when I worked for 25 years, I bicycled to work during the summer.
Yeah.
And three rules. I didn't go too fast.
Yeah.
I stayed away from trucks.
Mm-hmm.
And I obeyed the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Because, one of the things is Felix Salmon is stock trader or hedge fund guy who writes a blog on biking.
Yeah.
He and I agree on one thing.
Mm.
Just the drivers know what other drivers will do in any situation. They figured it out. And they also figured out what a pedestrian will do. But they haven't, and it's apparently still true, nobody has figured out what a biker is going to do in the next minute or the next second.
I think that's a wildly, drivers knowing what pedestrians are going to do is just the most, no offense, that's just a ridiculously pat thing to say when you look at I'm going to be honest with you, I don't have the figures right in front of me of how many pedestrians have been killed by drivers this year, but it's a lot and it's bad. Yes. And drivers are mowing down pedestrians left, right, and center and on the sidewalk. If they know what the pedestrians are going to do and they've figured out how to deal with that, that's ludicrous. That's ludicrous.
Drivers get up and they look for pedestrians to hit.
Well, they might as well be if you look at the numbers. That's what I'm saying. I mean, the numbers just do not bear that out. The numbers do not bear out what you're saying, drivers have somehow figured out what pedestrians are going to do and can avoid hitting them, but they can't figure out how to avoid cyclists. That makes no sense. They're hitting pedestrians like crazy out there.
I'm going to install a camera in my car because I can't tell you how many bikers I let live by jamming on my brakes as they went through red lights.
Thank you for your benevolence, but, you know, I mean...
No, all drivers are benevolent, because there would be no bikers on the street if
look up how many people have been killed by drivers and tell me how benevolent they are. Okay, so you rode a bike for a long time. Have you ever... you never encountered a driver who was antagonistic towards you, who...
Oh, yeah, sure.
You have. Was that benevolence? What explains that?
And I haven't ended up in a hospital.
If you've encountered drivers like that... You're talking about inches that you're lucky that you didn't wind up in a hospital. Someone else wound up in a hospital. You're talking about Third Avenue in Brooklyn. You're talking about the recent deaths in Brooklyn. One of those recent deaths was somebody who was just riding along and someone flung a car door open in front of her and sent her under the wheels of a truck. You're saying avoid trucks. You can't avoid trucks if a door like a pinball machine flipper knocks you off your bike and throws you under a truck. You can't avoid that.
She was going too fast.
What you're doing is called victim blaming. You can say she was going too fast. You can suspect anything you want. I mean, that doesn't mean she was going too fast.
Nobody will look at the fact that she was on an avenue, which is a truck route, filled with trucks, and I live...
Everybody's looking at it. Everybody wants the roads to be designed better and wants the truck traffic bicycle traffic.
The roads have got to be designed for purpose. Yeah. And if 99% of the traffic is vehicles, motor vehicles, it's got to be designed for that, or else the economy comes to a halt.
You can't have a city that's designed 99% for motor vehicles. It doesn't work. Is everyone supposed to get around in a motor vehicle? How do you have a city that's designed 99% of motor vehicles? Doesn't work. It's not working. We see it's not working.
Will you just stop talking and listen?
I'm a radio host. That's why I talk.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
But you're not going to learn anything, and your listeners aren't going to learn anything.
Every
time they bring out and said, oh, there's an amazing amount of increase in bikers. Mm. That's not really true. The only time I ever saw a specific survey of people, they were asked, do you ever use a motor vehicle? 97% of them said yes. They weren't drivers; they were passengers. They were on buses. They were in trucks. They were in cars. 97% of the city of New York gets around by motor vehicle at least once a month.
What do you think the percentage of people who have traveled by air is? What do you think that percentage would be?
The latest percentage I saw that there was something like 4 billion trips taken last year.
By airplane?
By 2037, there will be 8 billion trips taken per year, and that will be a billion more than the number of people on the Earth.
Okay, so if most people have been in an airplane, should we put more runways in the city? I mean, because your logic that just because people use cars, if someone rides in a taxi once a week, that you don't have streets designed 99 for, and you can't deny the increase in cycling. The numbers are there. It's increased like 200% in the last couple of decades or something like that. You're seeing things the way you want to see them, and that's fine. And I'm glad that in your years of cycling, you were fortunate enough not to get injured. I'm very glad for you, but other people are getting injured, and you don't have magical powers. You're not the world's best cyclist. You know, you were cautious, but you were also fortunate. So that's the reality. And I want to thank you very much for the call. I hope you get back on the bike. We do need to take a short break here. When I come back, I'll take more calls. Thanks a lot. Hang tight.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't tell me to stop.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
Hey, Maya, guess what? Kylie Jenner's new lip kit is out.
Mercedes, are you really going to spend your money on that garbage?
It's not garbage. She finally released a color I've been looking for, ginger.
Mercedes, you can do so much more.
Like what?
You can donate it to WBAI and become a BAI buddy.
What's a BAI buddy?
A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly donation to WBAI. Once you join, you'll receive a BAI buddy card and a free tote bag. The BAI buddy card allows you to become eligible for on-air giveaways and receive discounts at local shops, museums, and venues. And that's not even the best part. You can get all of this and more by donating as little as $10 a month.
That sounds amazing. I want to become a BAI buddy. How can I join?
You can sign up at WBAI.org.
WBAI.org? Got it. Thanks. And you're right, I can do a lot more at WBAI than with Kylie Jenner.
It's all about supporting a medium that keeps it 100.
Hi, you're back with Bike Snob on WBAI. This is Eben Weiss. I've been talking about this meeting that happened in Park Slope last week, a sort of anti-bike meeting that became hostile. I'm taking calls today, 212-209-2877. Before I take any more calls, I will get to them shortly. I just want to continue a little bit on this theme of entitlement. So is it entitlement that is causing people to become angry about bike lanes to the point of physically pushing people around in meetings or yelling at people on the street? Or is something else going on here? Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal ran a story about anxiety in men, quoting from that article, anxious men may present as loose cannons, but they are worriers, says Kevin Chapman, a clinical psychologist in Louisville, Kentucky. Aggression tends to be more socially acceptable to many men than anxiety. This makes sense. You can certainly see how anxiety can turn into rage and how people can lose their tempers when they become overwhelmed. Moreover, it's well documented that car commuting has an adverse effect on mental and physical health. There's even a study that found a link between rush hour traffic and domestic violence in Los Angeles. Not only that, another study found that pollution from cars causes anxiety in children. This is from a story that ran yesterday in Forbes. Quote, another study found a connection between recent high traffic-related air pollution exposure, that's TRAP is the acronym, and children's mental health. Using neuroimaging techniques, the researchers traced the link between TRAP, metabolic disturbances in the brain, and symptoms of generalized anxiety, there's that word again, anxiety disorder in otherwise healthy kids. The main culprit in the connection indicated by neuroimaging results was the brain's inflammatory response to air pollution. So this is sort of chilling. We're driving around stressed out, and the fumes from our cars are literally choking kids' brains and making them stressed out too. Now let's look at bikes. Study after study shows that bike commuters are happier, are healthier, have better life expectancy, and these benefits outweigh the dangers posed by pollution and even the risks posed by crashing. As far as getting around, it's as close to a free lunch as you're going to get. And sure, if you haven't ridden a bike in 50 years, you're probably not going to hop on one right now and ride in New York City traffic. And it's great if you want to do that, but no bike advocate is trying to force you to do that. At the same time, this hardly seems like a reason to actively try to stop the city from fostering an environment that makes it possible for more people to adopt bikes or to fight a necessary and inevitable shift towards this sort of transportation by shoving people at meetings. Okay, 212-209-2877 is the number. WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Evan. It's this is Ian calling from Astoria.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
Not too bad. Hey, I'm a driver, and I think I'm starting to come around to your point of view that there just are too many damn cars in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think that, you know, the pressure that's put on, like, young people to get their driver's license at 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you know, what's the next thing? They feel entitled to having a car, having their own car.
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I think what you said about anxiety is right on target because, like, yesterday I drove to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And coming back, there was like an hour and a half delay on the George Washington Bridge. And another 45 minutes at the tunnels. So I decided I would drive all the way up to the thruway to get over to Mario Cuomo.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? I ran into traffic there 45 minutes before the construction. And I was hyperventilating and, you know, almost going out of my mind just because I was stuck in traffic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've all been there. I've been there. Look, you know, this is Bike Snob. This is a bike-specific, bike-centric show. I drive, too. The short version of why I drive is like everybody else. I'm entitled, and if I'm an entitled person, and if I think I can save time by driving or find convenience, I still do it. It is not a game you can win, though. As you say, I mean, we've all been in that situation as drivers where you're trapped like that. And instead of the difference, I think, though, is some people continue to think that we can engineer our way out of this problem, that we can fit more cars, we can somehow solve this issue, and it can continue to be possible in the 21st century to hop in a car, go wherever, whenever you want in New York City with convenience. Like, that's a solvable problem. Some people still think that. Other people have realized this. Even if you're still driving, you realize this isn't a game you can win. You can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't. And I like that you brought up young people getting licenses, and then, yes, next you want your car. And look,
yeah.
You know, it's great to, it's on a very simplistic level, you get a car. If you like cars, it's a cool thing. You have the sense of ownership. You customize it. You do whatever you want with the car. But it's, you know, it doesn't, it can't work. It can't work on a large scale as a urban policy for transport. Yeah.
Yeah, what the manufacturers have done now, which I think is a horrible thing, is putting more horsepower under the hood of those cars, instead of going smaller like some of the European countries, in which, you know, a lot of the cars there are like maybe under 100 horsepower. Now they're giving you 400 or 500 horsepower
Yeah, these cars are monsters. They're monsters. Yeah. And you can be, all you need is a license to get one. You can drive it anywhere you want. You know, you could, there's a, other, you mentioned Europe, you know, not only is there, you know, they're not SUV crazy quite the way we are, but they also, I mean, it differs country to country, but in a country like Germany, I mean, you have to really be, you're not, you don't just pass a test and get a license. You're trained. You have to.
Yeah.
Drive at night, you have to drive manual transmission, you have to show real proficiency in driving.
Exactly.
And we are the opposite. You have to get a driver's license, but it's a very, very low bar to get a driver's license. You pass the test once and you're in, and then you can go buy a Hemi or whatever. And
you have 17-year-olds out there driving, like you say, these Dodge Ram Chargers and killing people.
Yeah,
It's insane.
And look, it's an American thing. You know, we have this... you know, idealized, it's like movie Grease, where the teenagers, they get their muscle cars and they go on dates and they drag race at night. And it's this quaint idea that I guess we still subscribe to in some way in this. It's an American thing. Yeah.
Freedom. Yeah.
It's perceived freedom. But just as you say, it's not freedom when if you go to Jersey, you can't get back.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and we need to start. And that's not saying, you know, people, we buy cars and we drive them because we're still being told that that's what we should be doing. But, you know, we need to engineer our way out of it by giving people other ways to get around. Should everybody be riding a bike from Astoria to Jersey? No, it's not workable for everybody. But, you know, you need better transit. You need to focus on transit. You need to focus on, you know, taking a bike to a train station. Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much for the insight. I really appreciate that. Taking more calls, WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from New Brunswick, New Jersey. My name is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I've been listening to the broadcast, and I'm an avid cyclist. I go back probably to the, I guess when I got my driver's license, I decided I could either not use my legs anymore or continue cycling, and I just decided to continue cycling. I'm in my early 60s now, and I used to commute to work. And the problem with commuting to work became, just as you're saying, is the extent of the traffic, the anger of aggressive motorists. And the other thing is not only that, but then you have a lot of distracted drivers. And I had a number of close encounters, which if I wasn't anticipating a driver doing something stupid, I probably would have been run over. So, I mean, I just wanted to say that, you know, the discussion today based upon establishing bike lanes is difficult because you have an infrastructure that's designed only for automobiles, and try to retrofit that simply by paint and such is a difficult thing, and you're going to have the encounters that you've had, and you'll probably get a lot of angry calls like I've heard so far from people who are, you know, elderly like me, but obviously not tolerant of cyclists being on the road. So I just wanted to, you know, just kind of say that. I think that bike lanes are essential, and I think that getting people aware and alert to cycling, that cyclists are out there and that it's one less car on the road, they should be appreciative of that. But as I say, I've given up the commuting aspect of it for a number of those reasons. Unfortunately, I'm back to my car. It was a 12-mile-a-day commute one way, which makes it more difficult.
Well, so, you know,
I just...
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, you're talking about you're perceived maybe, you know, forgive me if I'm mischaracterizing what you're saying, but part of what led to your shifting away from bike commuting and back to the car is your perception that there's more danger, there's more distracted driving, that sort of thing, and that infrastructure alone doesn't address that, and I agree with you, and distracted driving is obviously a huge problem, and you know, I don't know, you're in New Brunswick, I don't know what the figures are in New Jersey, but you know, I suggest anybody as far as New York City goes, I've looked at the year-on-year numbers of motor vehicle registrations in New York City, and let me tell you, every single year in New York City, I don't think there's been an exception to this that I've seen. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that every single year, as far as you go back, there have been more motor vehicle registrations in New York City. That's it. Up, 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 up every year. So people can say whatever they want about this bike lane took away parking. That's why it's so difficult for me to drive. The reason the ambulances can't get through, you name it, there's more cars every year, period. Yeah, and those are just the cars that are legally registered in New York. That, you know, we all know, you look on your street, like half the cars have plates from other states because people do that racket. So there's just cars upon cars. And that, yeah, of course, throw distracted driving into that. And you know, sure. And I'm glad you mentioned this because, we've had in the last couple of decades, as I mentioned earlier, we've had a very big increase in the number of bicyclists in New York City. However, for the last couple of years, that number's kind of leveled off or maybe even gone down a little bit. I believe it's declined slightly, not a huge amount by any means, but I believe the numbers for cycling, the bike counts have dropped slightly in the last 2 years. And certainly, you can see how we might plateau in that we haven't taken the next step. We're putting in these bike lanes, which, as you say, don't really necessarily address the underlying problem that you have. More and more cars every year, and you have more and more distractions. So, of course, the bike infrastructure that we've done in the last decade or two brought in a lot of people, but it's not going to take us. The infrastructure alone definitely can't take us to the next level. There needs to be more. You and the caller before you are sort of on the same page in that you both live in different places and you both have different experiences, but you're both are drawing the same conclusion. The caller before was a driver, lives in Astoria, but he's realizing, look, you know, the driving thing, it just doesn't you can't keep it working. And you're seeing, look, more and more cars, people can't ride. We're really at a point where we're really hitting a wall, or we've hit.
Well, I think one of the things too is, like you say, is that you try to develop a culture amongst, in the community or in society in general. You go to Europe and they've already established that sort of culture in numerous, northern European cities where bikes coexist with pedestrians and automotive traffic. And so that's we don't have that here. And I think the part of it is that it's almost that individualistic aspect of, I got to have a car, I got to have access to the roads, I can't have anybody in my way. And then anger and frustration when they do run into somebody that is on a bicycle. You know? And that is, that's part of it as well, too. So, and I don't know whether or not we can actually change that. Like you say, you make inroads, and you have made inroads incrementally over the years, but it's just not, you don't see it sustaining. Like you say, numbers are leveling off. People are finding, aside from the aggressive drivers, aside from the lack of cycling infrastructure that we have, or non-existent infrastructure, and there's also a convenience. When I commuted, I had to figure out, okay, well, I had to have clothes when I get to work. There's no showering spots, no stuff like that. That sort of thing. And that's a logistical thing. But, getting back to, you say, I saw the video of the shoving match that went on, and I'm glad I was listening to your program. I just happened to have off today. And I thought to myself, this is where we're at as a society. It's like showmen. If it can't make it to a Jerry Springer like thing, then it's not worth showing it on TV.
Yeah.
So anyway, hey, listen, I appreciate you taking my call, and I cycle a lot. I still cycle, but I don't travel out of New Brunswick anymore. I actually drive to a place where I'm sure I won't get hit.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I know. I understand. Yeah. Thank you so much for the call.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye now.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, I just want to say before I take another call, you know, that as this is Bike Snob, this is a bike-centric show, you know, bikes are not, nobody's saying, I'm certainly not saying bikes are a one-stop solution for everybody's transit needs. Far from it. You know, I think what it is really the common denominator here is we have sort of, we're at a crisis point with car dependency, especially in the city. And look, all this stuff varies from city to city, from city to suburb, from wherever. You know, different transit solutions are applicable to different circumstances, of course. But, you know, we're at a point where we're really in a bad place with cars. It's too much. You know, I'm a bike-centric person, and, you know, bikes are still really underutilized, especially in New York City. There's so much more potential we haven't tapped, and it's not just bikes. I could go on about buses and how important buses are in public transportation, and all of these things go together, and all of these things have been marginalized for so long, and all of these things we really need to unleash the full potential of bikes, of public transportation, of all these new forms of mobility that are coming in, scooters and bike share and everything, all of that stuff. You know, we have so many more tools now than we used to get around, and, you know, it's really time for a big policy shift, especially in New York City, where it's crowded and the distances are relatively short. Okay, WBAI, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
How you doing? It's Anthony from Brooklyn, Carroll Gardens. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Okay, so I've been lucky. I'm retired, and I get you every Monday. So
yeah.
you have, as the expression says, the bully pulpit.
Yes.
Now, I'm a bike rider, and I also drive a car.
Yeah.
But I enjoy my bike. I ride it for recreation and for health.
Yeah.
And here's my point. I always see, you'll know me when I say this, the Uber drivers that wait in the bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
Smith Street, I'll give you an example. I live on Smith Street. There's two sides of the street. Yet the Uber drivers are always in the bike lane. Now, as from the bully pulpit, you could call Uber and tell them to direct the people who advertise to them and use their right to pick us up, do not use the bike lane to rest or go through your phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
They constantly do that.
Yeah, well, you know, there's one thing, there's too many Ubers, there's too many Lyfts, there's too many of all of those that's contributing a lot to all the congestion. At the same time, one positive about this stuff is that there's a little more accountability. As you say, you know, you can go to Uber. First of all, if you see a driver parked in a bike lane of one of these cars, you can report them to the TLC, and they'll do a hearing, and you know they'll call you on the phone, and you can testify and say, you know, this car was parked in the bike lane, and they'll actually do something about it. You try that with a private car, you're getting nowhere. Another thing is, you know, the technology. Obviously, these drivers are connected. Everyone's connected. The passenger's connected. The passenger has an Uber app on their phone.
So
the driver has the Uber app. Everyone's connected. Everyone can get messages. And I'm an occasional, you know, I use an Uber once in a blue moon. I haven't seen it myself, but, you know, what I've seen online is that, you know, what they're doing now is you get in an Uber, it will send you an alert. It'll send the passenger, I think, even an alert, or the driver an alert that there's bike lanes on this route, so look out. So there is this sort of there is the potential there for more of that sort of thing. And I've said on the show before that I'm astounded as a driver that I get in my car and my phone knows where I'm going and suggests traffic routes to me. My phone does not warn me about bike lanes. My phone does not tell me the speed limit and to slow down, and I'm in a school zone. So you're right. You know, there's technology can do a lot. So
the other thing, sir, that was the first lady that called up about the electric bikes. If you can educate me, because I'm also the same person that tells you that they are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. They're stealth in their approach. They go fast, and they are the people that are doing this for a living and going up and down streets, going in the opposite direction all the time. What's the difference between the electric bikes? The ones with the big, almost 24-inch battery, are those the ones that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, those are the ones that are those are what they call a throttle, throttle-operated e-bike.
So all these restaurants, all these places of business that are making money are allowing these people, because they're probably independent contractors. And they're probably not even working
directly.
Yeah,
well, they're like Uber. They usually, a lot of them are working for delivery apps. They're not working for one restaurant. So, and Uber is one of the companies that does this. So these companies basically, I'm going to make this quickly. I mean, if you're a delivery person and you're working for one of these apps, you're picking up food at this restaurant and that restaurant and the other restaurant. You're not just doing it for one restaurant. You're picking up wherever there's a delivery available. You know, they're basically bidding out the jobs. You know, and people are just cyclists are just grabbing the work. So yeah, and that's creating an environment where there's it's hyper competitive, and so it does kind of encourage a type of riding that's not ideal. It's not an ideal situation on a lot of levels. You know, I'm afraid I'm going to have to cut the call short because we're at the end of the show, but I really appreciate the call and you're calling in. And thank you to everybody for listening. This has been Bike Snob on WBAI. I'm Evan Weiss. Ride safe out there. Have a great day.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Coming up at 11, Living for the City.
Hey Maya, guess what? Kylie Jenner's new lip kit is out.
Mercedes, are you really going to spend your money on that garbage?
It's not garbage. She finally released a color I've been looking for, ginger.
Mercedes, you can do so much more.
Like what?
You can donate it to WBAI and become a BAI buddy.
What's a BAI buddy?
A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a monthly donation to WBAI. Once you join, you'll receive a BAI buddy card and a free tote bag. The BAI buddy card allows you to become eligible for on-air giveaways and receive discounts at local shops, museums, and venues. And that's not even the best part. You can get all of this and more by donating as little as $10 a month.
That sounds amazing. I want to become a BAI buddy. How can I join?
You can sign up at WBAI.org.
WBAI.org? Got it. Thanks. And you're right, I can do a lot more at WBAI than with Kylie Jenner.
It's all about supporting a medium that keeps it 100.
Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain not to drop. Tell me everything I'm not. Don't.
Hi, this is Liz Wright. You're listening to WBA.